Okay, let's open up to chapter 37 of Sefer Bereshit, the beginning of Parshat Vayeshev. And this will be the chapter that will keep us occupied for the first three of the Shiurim. We'll be dividing the chapter into three sections. Today we'll be studying the opening verses of the chapter, which set the background for the Joseph and his brothers' stories and tensions. I'm going to try moving my microphone a little bit. It should work better. Next week we will study Yosef's dreams, Yosef the dreamer in this section, and then the third week we will focus on the story of the selling of Yosef, and the fourth week we will do a sketch continuing these different interactions between Yosef and his brothers that we encounter in chapter 37. We'll continue a sketch of them through the rest of Sefer Bereshit. So let's open to the beginning verses of the chapter. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv be'eretz Kanaan. Now, chapter 37 opens following something that just preceded it. Yaakov has given birth to his 12 tribes, to his 12 sons. He's already left Lavan. He's encountered Esav. He's returned to Eretz Kanaan and had a mishap with his daughter Dinah in the city of Shechem. Then he's gone on to the city of Beit El and purified his family and his camp from Avodah Zarah, from idolatry. His name has been changed to Yisrael. His 12th son, Binyamin, was born along the way. Rachel dies at that time. And then his father, Yitzchak, dies and is buried. That's what happens up through chapter 35 of Sefer Bereshit. Chapter 36, 43 verses, deals with Toldot Esav, the generations of Esav, and the big family that Esav generates, and they're spreading out and becoming kings and leaders in their own areas, in their own regions. We now open after that. So Yaakov is now the father of 12. Rachel has died. Yitzchak has died. We just read about Toldot Esav in the previous chapter, about how Esav has multiplied and spread out and taken a hold. And now we open up with our verse. Yaakov dwells in the land of his father's dwelling, in the land of Canaan. We'll focus in our interpretation stage, we'll focus on what does Megurei Aviv Be'eretz Canaan add to the picture. Right? It seems repetitive. It says Vayeshev Yaakov. It would have been sufficient to say that Yaakov dwelled Be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan. What do we learn additionally from telling us the Eretz Megurei Aviv, that this was the dwelling place of his fathers? We'll see some interpretations of that. Rosalind, has the source sheet come by any chance? And are you able to open it? And we'll continue with the next verse.
I did send it about, a few minutes ago. You can hit send receive, see if it came.
Rosalind, when you get a chance, please do send and receive, and let us know when it comes, please, and if you're at all able to open it. But in the meantime, we'll continue. We're going to first introduce the four verses, and then we'll raise some questions, and then we'll begin some of the interpretation of these verses. The next verse continues, Ela Toldot Yaakov, and this is a verse that we would expect after chapter 36, which was Toldot Esav. Now we're going to have the Toldot Yaakov, the generations of Yaakov. Excellent. I'm very happy that it arrived. Wonderful. And again, we're not going to read every word of it. We'll make reference to it, but that's wonderful if you're going to have it accessible to you. Great. So if you want, you can close your chumash if you want to read from the top of the source sheet. We're on Pasuk Bet, verse 2. Ela Toldot Yaakov. Here are the generations of Yaakov. And if you don't continue the verse, Rosalind or Jay or Ilana, why don't you write me back or speak up? What would you expect the verse to continue with? These are the generations of Yaakov. How does such a pasuk usually begin? Right, this week's Parshat HaShavua is also called Toldot, the generations. And how does it open? Right, Ve'ela Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Abraham. Abraham holidat Yitzchak. Abraham gave birth to Yitzchak. And then it tells us about Yitzchak and his children. Right. Ilana says very clearly, Well, one would have expected the list of Ela Toldot Yaakov to begin with Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Sachar. We have 12 sons by this point. By the end of chapter 35, there are 12 children of Yaakov, and Yosef is not the firstborn of that group. And instead of listing the full set of the generations of Yaakov, the pasuk continues, Yosef ben Shvasre Shana. Yosef is 17 years old. So these are the generations of Yaakov. These are the descendants of Yaakov, Yosef. And we'll study some interpretations of both the word and the concept, toladot, what that phrase may convey, other than simply genealogical connection. And we'll focus on why the other sons are not included on this list. So Yosef, we're told here, is 17 years old, and now the verse continues and gives us a number of other facts about Yosef that are going to be critical to understand the interaction between Yosef and his brothers that the rest of the chapter will relate. So he's 17 years old. Haya ro'eh t'chav batzon. He would shepherd, it sounds like, with his brothers when they go out with the flock. V'hunar, and he was a lad, and we'll have to see what this is telling us, et b'nei bilhav et b'nei zilpa neshe aviv. And he has some kind of, it sounds like, lad servant role towards, or lad master role. He has some relationship, but it's defined as v'hunar, and he's a lad, towards the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, the wives of his father. Just to remember, right, Bilhah and Zilpah were the maidservants of Rachel and Leah. They each gave their maidservant to Yaakov to have additional children. So, Yosef is 17 years old. He goes out with his brothers to work as a shepherd. And he has some unique relationship defined in the verse as Vihuna'ar, relating towards the sons of the Shvachot, the sons of the maidservants, Bilhah and Zilpah. Vayave Yosef et dibatam ra'a el avihem. And Yosef brought their bad reports, their lashon hara about them, to their fathers. Now, what does it sound like, that last phrase, that he brings dibatam ra'a, bad reports about them, or bad speech about them? Is it referring to just the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, or could it be referring to all of his brothers? What do you think? Because the verse tells us that he was 17 years old, Haya ro'eh et echav batzon, he would shepherd with all of his brothers out in the field with the sheep. And then he has this unique na'ar relationship with B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah, and he brought their bad reports about them to their father. So the final them, referring to the people whom he brings bad reports about to their father, does that, okay, suggestion that the Torah is purposely ambiguous. And what we'll see in some of the commentaries is that some try and link it specifically to bad reports about the children of the Shvachot, B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah, while others are broader and link the Dibara'ah that Yosef brings to his father to all of the brothers. So we encounter Yaakov dwelling in the land of his forefathers, in the land of Canaan. That's how our parak opens. Next verse, these are the toldot of Yaakov, and instead of Reuven, Shimon, and the whole list of all 12 sons, we're told Yosef. There's only one son that we're going to focus on. And this son is 17 at the time. We know a few facts about him. He's a shepherd, and he has a relationship with the children of the maidservants, Bilhah and Zilpah, defined as Vehunar. He's a lad. And Yosef brings bad reports about all or some of his brothers and stepbrothers back to his father. So if you had to stop here and guess what would happen between Yosef and his brothers, what script do you think you would be writing for the rest of chapter 37? This is what we know. Yaakov settles in Eretz Canaan. Yosef seems to be his prime or focused progeny. He's the one listed on the list of the generations. Yosef, on the one hand, is an equal. He goes out to shepherd the flock with all of his brothers, but he has some seemingly superior role vis-a-vis the children of the maidservants. And to top it all off, right, he brings back bad reports about his brothers or stepbrothers to their father. How would you write the rest of the script? Then we'll have to leave it to the Torah. The story continues, Yisrael Ahavet Yosef, verse 3, Pasuk Gimel, Yisrael, that's Yaakov, loved Yosef, Mikol Banav, more than all of his children, more than all of his sons, Ki Ben Zekunim Hulo, because he is a Ben Zekunim, and we will focus on interpretations of that phrase, Ben Zekunim. It seems to mean on a simple pshat level, Ben Zekunim, he is a son of old age. For Yaakov, that Yosef was born while Yaakov was old, but we'll see some challenges to that interpretation and alternative interpretations. Va'asalo k'tonet pasim. And Yisrael, Yaakov, not only loves Yosef more than all the other sons, because Yosef is a ben zekunim, but Yosef, Yaakov does something to concretize his favoritism. He does something to demonstrate it. Namely, he makes for Yosef a k'tonet pasim. Usually recognize it from Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat. Sorry, I'm losing my earphones. We usually recognize that there is a striped robe, right? We'll see some other interpretations. Ktonet is a robe. Pasim can be stripes. We'll see some other interpretations of that phrase. Vayiru pasuk dalet. Feel free, as we're going along, if there are questions or terms that I'm not translating sufficiently, or questions that you want to raise, feel free to either raise them if you have your mic or through the chat box. Otherwise, I'll continue to try and ask some questions, and you can or can't respond as you feel comfortable. Pasuk dalet, vayiru achav, his brothers see, ki oto ahav avihem mikol achav, his brothers see that their father loves Yosef more than all the other brothers, vayisne'u oto, and the brothers hated Yosef, v'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom, and they couldn't even speak nicely, peacefully to Yosef. We have four verses here that set the background for what's going to unfold in a very, very tense chapter. The next verses deal with Yosef's dreams and the additional hatred and jealousy that those dreams trigger among the brothers. That will be next week's studies. And the chapter concludes with the dramatic story of the selling of Yosef and the role that the brothers, all some or none, played in that sale. So today we're trying to unpack the background. Four verses. Yaakov dwells in the land of his forefathers in the land of Canaan. Second, these are the toldot of Yaakov, but we don't get the full list of all the sons. We just start with Yosef. Already the favoritism is introduced there. And Yosef, we learn a few facts. He's 17. He was a shepherd with his brothers. He had some formal relationship, v'hunar, towards the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, the maidservants of Rachel and Leah. And Yosef brings back negative reports either just about those stepbrothers or about all of his brothers and stepbrothers. And instead of hearing that Yaakov rebukes Yosef for the bad reports, or that Yaakov found that to be a turnoff about Yosef, Pasuk Gimel told us that Yaakov loved Yosef and favored him more than all of the other brothers, because Yosef is a ben zekunim to Yaakov. Tentatively, we'll translate that as a son of old age to Yaakov. And therefore, as a result of his love and his favoritism, Yaakov makes for Yosef a ktonet pasim. Tentatively, we'll leave that as a striped robe, a striped garment. The brothers in Pasuk Dalet have what seems to be the natural reaction, which is they see that their father favors Yosef. The robe only makes it more clear. And they hate him and can't speak peacefully to him. And from here, the story then continues into the ultimate sale of Yosef. We want to focus a little bit today on each element in these verses. Okay, we'll open with the sources that are marked Pasuk Aleph. We'll only look at a little bit of each source. What's marked Pasuk Aleph, source number one. This is a Midrash from Bereshit Rabbah. Rashi quotes part of this midrash, and we'll read the first two lines of the midrash. Amar Rav Acha, b'sha'a sha'tzadikim mevakshim leshev b'shalva ba'olam hazeh, when the righteous seek to dwell peacefully in this world, ha'satan ba, the satan comes, u'mekatreg, and comes to prosecute. And he says to God, he says, isn't it enough that the righteous are going to have a good life, a peaceful life in the world to come? They also want to rest peacefully here in this world. And the proof that Rabbi Acha brings for this, that it's very difficult for the righteous to try and find a peaceful existence here in this world, is from Yaakov Avinu. The pasuk here tells us, "Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv be'eretz Canaan." Yaakov sought to dwell. Vayeshev. He sought to dwell peacefully, finally, and rest and end all of his travels in the land of his forefathers. Right up till now, Yaakov's been on the run, literally. Right, he had to run away as a child after the brachot that he stole from his brother Esav. He had to run as a fugitive to the house of Lavan, his mother's family. Then, in the house of Lavan, he has to work very hard. He's tricked about his wife. He has to stay extra time and work overtime. Then, at the end, when he wants to leave and return home to his parents, he has to have a settlement about the sheep and the cattle that they've raised. Then Yaakov has to encounter Esav. Yaakov doesn't have it easy up till now. When he gets then back to Eretz Canaan, then he has the mishap of Dinah and the city of Shechem. Dinah's basically alleged rape. Says the Midrash, Yaakov now in chapter 37, our chapter, finally wants to rest peacefully towards the end of his life and live in the land of his forefathers with his family and not be bothered by all sorts of problems. But what happens? The Satan comes and disturbs his rest. And the Midrash actually quotes a verse from the book of Job, from Eov. It quotes a verse from the book of Eov that I didn't rest, I didn't have quiet, and I didn't even have time to settle, and then trouble, anger came and stirred me up. And the Midrash interprets each phrase of that, I didn't rest from Lavan, I didn't have a chance to relax from the story of Dinah, and then anger came, the story now of Yosef. The Midrash here paints a Job-like portrait of Yaakov Avinu, a tragic hero who up till now has been building his family, building his flock, and we would expect, like Job, to finally let him flourish and live peacefully. Says the Midrash, no such luck. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv. He wants to live peacefully, but that's not the way it works. The next Midrash, source number 2, tries to explain the phrase in the first verse that Yaakov dwells, instead of simply saying Be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan, that's the geographic definition of where Yaakov lives, it tells us that he lives Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, in the land of his forefathers' dwelling, in the land of Canaan. And that's truly repetitive. We readers of Sefer Bereshit know that the land of Yaakov's forefathers, or that Eretz Canaan, is the land of where his forefathers dwelt. So we could have been fine with only one of those two phrases. Either Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Canaan, or Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megurei Aviv. Then we would know that that was Eretz Canaan. And we have here in this Midrash, in source number 2, two attempts, two different mishalim, two different parables that are offered to compare Yaakov's attempted settlement in Eretz Canaan. I think you'll find them very interesting. Here's the first one. We'll start on line 3. Right? Amar Rav Chunya. He's going to give us a mashal, a comparison, to tell us how our verse that Yaakov tries to dwell in Eretz Canaan connects to what we just read in chapter 36, namely the full long list of Toldot Esav, all of the generations and the genealogies of Esav. And the Midrash makes a comparison, according to Rabbi Chunya. We can compare it, it says, to somebody who was walking along the way and saw a whole band of wild dogs and was afraid of them, of course. What's the natural reaction of somebody who's out on the road alone and sees a band of wild dogs? What would you expect them to do? Rosalind and Alan, how are we doing with the source sheet and with following? Doing okay? Send me a note, please, if you're okay. Great. You're okay, I'm okay. Excellent. Hopefully by the end we'll all be more than okay. So what should we expect from the person who's walking along the road and encounters a band of dogs and is afraid of them? I know that I'm afraid of dogs, and I usually go in the other direction. But what does our person do in the mashal, in the parable? Vayeshev lo beinehem. He goes and he dwells with these wild dogs. Concludes Rabbi Chunya, this is the same as Yaakov. Yaakov just read the previous chapter about the long list of all of Esav's not only descendants, but tribal chieftains that come out of his family. And what does he do? He's afraid of them, and he goes and he dwells in their midst. This mashal, this parable of Rabbi Chunya, has Yaakov Avinu doing the unnatural and the unexpected. Instead of seeing that Esav and his big family and his tribal chieftains are settled in the Middle East, they're like the group of dogs, the natural reaction of Yaakov would have been to run back to Lavan or run back somewhere else and settle his family somewhere else. But instead, what does Yaakov do? He sees chapter 36. He sees Esav and his descendants taking hold. And what does Yaakov do? Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz migurei aviv be'eretz Canaan. Yaakov dwells in their midst. He goes and he settles right where this band of wild dog is. He does the exact unexpected, but this unexpected act is an act of tremendous gvura, of tremendous heroism, because as a result of his settling inside, next to going to live next to this pack of dogs, he realizes he won't be attacked because the dogs will learn to not be afraid of him or learn not to attack him. They'll each learn to live peacefully. So the first mashal here, the first parable, tries to connect what we just had in chapter 36, the genie.
Okay, that's
theologies of Esav and his descendants and their chieftains, with Yaakov's attempts to settle peacefully in Eretz Yisrael. And what the Midrash tells us, according to Rabbi Chunya, is this can be compared to somebody who does the unexpected. They go and they settle in literally violent territory. Yeah. Yes, Jay?
No, I was just saying, you froze for about 10 seconds.
Is everybody back?
In your last, like...
That's weird.
Yeah, but you froze for about 10 seconds. We couldn't hear what you were saying in the last, 20 seconds.
Sorry. Okay, I didn't do anything.
This time I'm just letting you know.
I haven't touched anything. No, thank you. Thank you. Please let me know if it happens again, and we have to solve that. So here we have one parable trying to understand the connection between chapter 36, the generations of Esav, and Yaakov in chapter 37, trying to settle in Israel. And the parable says it can be compared to the person who's walking and meets the pack of dogs, and instead of running in the opposite direction, they go and settle with them. And that's Yaakov not running away from Esav, but hoping that if he settles literally inside their midst in the Middle East, he won't be attacked. And this parable understands this phrase, De'eretz migurei aviv, in the land of his father's dwelling. It understands that word migurei from the language gur. Gur is a synonym for pachad, for yirah, for fear in Hebrew. So that Yaakov settles in the land of the fears of his fathers, and it's trying to connote the fear that he has towards his neighbors, towards his hostile brother Esav and all of his descendants. The Midrash continues with Rabbi Levi offering an alternative parable to Yaakov settling right after Esav and his descendants are written. And Rabbi Levi's parable is as follows. We can compare it, he says, to a smith that had his little shop open into the middle of a main thoroughfare, and across from him, his son, who's a goldsmith, has his little shop open to this. And the two of them are watching the main road, the smith and the goldsmith, or the gold dealer, and they see, entering into their country, bundles and bundles of thorns. And they say one to another, right? What a poor country we have that this is what comes in, thorns. And there was one really smart guy there and says, hey, why are you guys afraid of thorns? Why do thorns bother you so much? Each of you from your shop, you each work with fire for your metals. All you need is one little spark to fly out of each of your shops, and you'd burn all of the thorns. Says Rabbi Levi, this can be compared to Yaakov Avinu, that when he saw all of Esav's descendants and the tribes that came out of Esav, he was rightly afraid. And Hashem says to Yaakov, just like the smart man says to the smith and to the goldsmith in the mashal, in the parable, from these guys you're afraid? You're afraid of them? Just like the wise man asked the smith and the goldsmith why they're afraid of thorns. One little spark from you, Yaakov, and of your son, and one little spark from your son, Yosef, you'll burn them up, says the mashal, says the midrash. Here, in this version of the mashal, of the parable, again, trying to deal with the connection between chapter 36, the listing of the genealogies of Esav and their growing strength, with chapter 37, Arav chapter, of Yaakov trying to settle in Eretz Canaan. This parable takes a different focus. It doesn't focus on Yaakov doing the unnatural. This focuses on the contrast between the worthless listings in chapter 36 that can be compared to bramble and thorns versus Yaakov and Yosef, who are of such weight and magnitude that one little spark from them can go out and destroy all of Esav and his descendants. Here are the second mashal, the second parable, tries not only to connect chapter 36 and 37, but it also links very well into the second verse of our chapter. Ele toldot Yaakov Yosef. Why only Yosef is listed? Well, according to this second parable, Yosef and Yaakov together, each of them have that correct spark of true faith and true allegiance to God, and that together, as a team, Yosef and Yaakov, their two sparks could burn up, literally, all of the thorns to which Esav and his descendants are compared. So verse 1, according to the Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah, has a few different perspectives that it's trying to convey. In the first section of the Midrash that we looked at, we saw the emphasis on Yaakov's attempted Vayeshev. Yaakov finally, after months and years of being on the run, finally wants a little bit of shalva, a little bit of peace and quiet. And he hopes that finally now he's returning to his father's land, that now finally he can rest. Says the Midrash, no such luck. Now Yaakov is going to have a new set of problems. He's already had Esav, he's already had Lavan, he's already had the problem of Dinah, and now he's going to enter into Yosef. And then we saw two parables that try to link chapter 36 and 37 and connect the chapters called Smichut Parshiot, deal with the narrative flow of Sefer Bereishit, and each one offered a different perspective on the connection between Yaakov settling in Eretz Canaan and Esav and his descendants taking hold and growing and becoming powerful. We'll now look at one or two of the sources of dealing with Pasuk Bet. These sources try to understand the phrase toldot. We were introduced in the second verse, Ele toldot Yaakov. These are the generations or the descendants of Yaakov. And instead of beginning with Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, we opened right away only with Yosef. So we'll look at source number one, again, only a few lines, and we'll see that toldot, according to the interpreters in the Midrash, means more than the begat list, the list of the generations in Sefer Bereishit. Because if toldot here meant simply who Yaakov gave birth to, then the Torah would need to open the list with Reuven, Shimon, and the rest of the children in order, and not just with Yosef. Okay, so we are in the first Midrash, Bereishit Rabbah of Pasuk Bet. The Midrash opens, Ele toldot Yaakov Yosef, hatoladot halalu, this begat list, this list of descendants, lo bao ela bizchuto shel Yosef. All of these descendants that Yaakov's going to have only came bizchut Yosef, only came in the merit of Yosef. And the Midrash continues to demonstrate this by showing us that Yaakov, when he went to Beit Lavan, his primary interest was to marry Rachel. And Yosef was the descendant that came from the Yaakov-Rachel marriage. And that therefore all of the other descendants from Rachel, from Leah, and from Bilhah, and from Zilpah, all of them really come, say the Midrash, Bizchut Yosef. They all come in the merit of Yosef because it was Yosef's mother, Rachel, that Yaakov was truly seeking when he started in Beit Lavan. so that instead of telling us Ela Toldot Yaakov, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and all of the other 10 brothers, and then getting up to Yosef, says the Midrash, the Torah doesn't have to tell us that. It tells us Ela Toldot Yaakov, these are the descendants of Yaakov, and all of them came Bizchut Yosef. All of them came in the merit of Yosef because Yaakov began the whole process of entering into Lavan's household and this whole adventure with Lavan and his tricking for the wives and then needed getting the maidservants. It all originated because of Rachel, who's the mother of Yosef. But the Midrash continues, and it asks the question that we've asked. How come it doesn't say, Ela Toldot Yaakov Reuven? These are the descendants of Yaakov Reuven. And the Midrash continues by listing 24 parallels that we can find in the toldot, in the literally generations, or in the activities of the generations, paralleling the lives of Yaakov and Yosef. And the Midrash here tries to use the term toldot, not as referring simply to genealogical begats, because if so, the list would need to say, here are the toldot of Yaakov, and it would need to start with Reuven and downwards. But the Midrash suggests that there are many, many parallels between the life of Yaakov and the life of Yosef, and that those are what are being conveyed in our verse by saying that the generations or the lifestyle or the life events of Yaakov are mirrored in that of Yosef. And the Midrash gives a number of examples. This is in the second big paragraph of that source, Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman. And the Midrash gives a series of 24 examples. Yaakov was born circumcised, according to the Midrash. Likewise was Yosef. Each of them came from a barren mother. Each of them came from a mother who had difficulty during childbirth. Each one was born to a mother who had two children. Right? Rivka has twins, Yaakov and Esav. Rachel has Yosef and Binyamin. Each one had brothers that hated him. Each one had brothers that sought to kill him. Each one was a shepherd. Each one, and the Midrash goes on and on with 24 parallels, comparing the lives of Yosef and Yaakov, understanding the term toldot to not be simply referring to genealogical begats, because if so, the list should have said, Ele toldot Yaakov Reuven, Shimon Levi Yehuda, but understanding the term toldot as making comparisons between the life events between Yaakov and Yosef. And the Midrash here suggests that there are many, many parallels. Here it brings 24 examples between the lives of Yaakov and Yosef. In source number 2 of Pasuk Bet, the Midrash Tanchuma, here the Midrash understands the word toldot differently. It understands toldot in its first interpretation as telling us that Yaakov and Yosef literally looked alike. They had the same image. And that therefore, again, all of the other tribes are not listed here because the Torah is not trying to convey to us the genealogies of Yaakov. We know them. We've already had the listing of the 12 tribes of Yaakov when they enter Eretz Canaan. We've already had the sons being born. We know whom Yaakov fathers. But that the point of our verse is to highlight the spatial similarity between Yaakov and Esav. But then the Midrash Tanchuma gives a davar acher, an alternative interpretation, which goes in the line that the above Midrash and Bereshit Rabbah went, that toldot refers to similar life events taking place between the two of them. Here it only brings 5 events in the Midrash Tanchuma. We had 24 above in the Bereshit Rabbah. 5 events trying to tell us that everything that happens to Yaakov happens to Yosef, and that's what's being conveyed by the phrase toldot. But if you remember, when we read verse 2, we learned that not only was the central progeny of Yaakov Yosef, Ela toldot Yaakov Yosef, we learned certain facts about Yosef. Yosef was 17 at the time, we were told, and we were told that he went out with his brethren into the field with their flocks. And the third fact we were told was that he has a special relationship with the children of the maidservants, Bilhah and Zilpah. It's defined as Vihu Na'ar. He's a lad, a young man, and he brings evil reports to his brother. Let's look at Midrash number 3, Bereshit Rabbah, source number 3 on Pasuk Bet. Begins Yosef ben Shvas Reshana. people might be familiar with this because Rashi brings a good portion of this midrash in his commentary to the verse. But these are some famous interpretations of the phrase Vehunar, that Yosef is a lad, and trying to understand the relationship between Yosef and the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, and the evil reports that he brings back to his father. Yosef ben Shvasre Shana. Ben Shvasre Shana, Va'at Amart Vehunar. Wait a minute, says the Midrash. You're calling a 17-year-old a lad? I guess a lad must have meant more of a boy, a younger boy. 17 is a young adult, not a younger boy. Ela shahaya osem asena arut. No, says the Midrash, the Torah here is not the Torah here by calling him a nar is not trying to give us an age description. It told us how old he is. He's 17, but yet how did he act? What was his behavior like? His behavior was one of a nar, one that befitted a younger boy. How so? Mimashmesh be'enav, he was constantly, I guess, fixing his eyes. Mitaken b'saro, he was busy fixing his hair. And matleb akevo, he walked with a very elevated gait to his heel. He had a certain pride about his step. The Midrash here is giving three examples of very negative behavior of Yosef when interacting with his brothers. But even though Yosef is 17, how does he act when he's interacting with his brothers? Vihuna'ar. He acts like a young boy who's busy worrying about his looks, about his eyes, maybe even plucking his eyebrows, who knows, right? We're not sure what they're telling us here. He's busy with his eyes, fixing his hair, and he has some haughty step to him when he takes a step. And the Midrash continues, offering a very negative portrayal of Yosef vis-a-vis his brothers. Vayaveh Yosef et dibatam ra'a l'avihem. The Pasuk told us that Yosef brought bad reports about his brothers to their father. Here we have a few perceptions in the Midrash, three different views in the Midrash, what bad reports Yosef brought about his brothers to their father. First report, Rabbi Meir Omer. Chashudim banecha al ever min achai. According to Rabbi Meir, what negative reports does Yosef bring back to his father? He says, hey, Dad, you let these guys go out to shepherd sheep. You think they're innocently taking care of sheep. Well, I'll tell you what they're really doing. They're involved in the sin of ever min achai, of eating limbs from a live animal. This is one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, one of the seven mitzvot commanded to all of mankind. This isn't something that's commanded specifically to Jews or to Zerah Avraham, to Avraham and his descendants. So Yosef tells his father, your children are, first of all, very, very vulgar, and they are violating one of the seven commandments that we all have to keep, Ever Min Achai. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, what bad report did he bring about all of the brothers? Mizalzalim hein bivnei ashvachot. All of the brothers, the children of Leah, the main brothers, they have a very, very, he says, disgusting attitude towards the children of the Shvachot, the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. They have a condescending attitude. First of all, they tease them, and what do they call them? They call them servants. After all, they are the children of the maidservants of their mother and their aunt. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, Yosef comes bringing a bad report about all of the brothers, but primarily the main brothers, the children of Leah. And he accuses them of teasing unfairly and calling the other stepsons, the children of the Shvachot, of the maidservants of Bilhah and Zilpah, they call them avadim, they call them servants. Then we have two more opinions, I'm sorry, there were four, not three opinions in the Midrash, about what sins Yosef accuses his brethren of. So sin number one, Ever Min Achai, eating live limbs, limbs from a live animal. Sin number two, of teasing and of calling the children of the maid servants, that they themselves are servants. Rabbi Shimon Omer, third view, Tolim Enehem Bivnot Haaretz, that they are involved on the border of promiscuity. They're busy. You sent them out to the field to take care of the sheep. Well, says Yosef to his father, I'll tell you, they're actually really busy checking out the young women in the new land that we just came to. So he accuses them of something bordering on Giloy Arayot, on illicit relations. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simon Amar, Al Tlatehon Laka. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simon suggests, that Yosef was ultimately punished for all three of these sins. And the Midrash continues showing how Yosef was punished, midah keneged midah, tit for tat, for each of these sins that he accused his brothers of eating ever min achai, and from there the Midrash concludes that therefore the brothers shechted an animal to dip his coat in, to prove that Yosef was lying, that they didn't eat live animals. When they needed to use an animal for blood, they knew darn well how to shecht it, how to kill it, not to use it live. Secondly, Yosef accuses his brothers of unnecessarily teasing the children of Bilhah and Zilpah and calling them slaves. Says the Midrash, Yosef gets himself sold into slavery, tit for tat, for that unfair accusation. And the third libel that Yosef has against his brothers is unfairly accusing them of being interested in the local women. And how do we see Yosef receiving punishment for that? Yosef in chapter 39 is seduced by a local woman in Egypt, Eshet Potiphar, Potiphar's wife. And that, according to Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simon, comes as punishment for Yosef's dibar ra'ah, evil reports to his father. So our verse here, verse number 2, sets the stage about the tensions that are going to arise and continue to develop between Yosef and his brothers. Even before we're told that Yosef is favored by Yaakov and that Yosef receives a special robe, Pasuk Bet spells out that Yosef is 17, but he's still a na'ar. He still acts like a lad in ways that just annoy and show his immaturity, annoy his brothers and show his immaturity to us, the reader. And then the verse tells us that he has some na'ar relationship with the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, that it sounds like he's standing up for them, accusing the other brothers, though, of belittling the children of the maidservants. And then the verse concludes that Yosef brings evil reports about his brothers to their fathers. And we saw in the Midrash three candidates for the evil reports, and a fourth suggestion that it's all of the above, namely of ever min achai, of not properly killing animals but just eating them live, or of mocking the children of the maidservants. And the third sin that he is accused of is of he accuses his brothers of is taking too much interest in the local women instead of in their sheep. And Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simon concludes that these evil reports that Yosef conveys to Yaakov are what ultimately lead Yosef to be punished, sold into slavery, seduced by Eshet Potiphar, and have his coat dipped into a killed animal, not a live animal's blood. So here already we build in the tensions between Yosef and the different brothers. From Pasuk Bet and the way the Midrash understands it, it's not hard to understand why Bnei Leah, the children of Leah, have a lot against Yosef. Before his father favors him and before he gets his special robe, already here Yosef is going around tattletaling about Bnei Leah. Why, though, do the children of the Shvachot have a problem with Yosef? This is something that the Ramban tries to understand in the comment in source number 4. And the Ramban, in order to understand how even the children of Bilhah and Zilpah came to hate Yosef, defines the phrase v'hu na'ar, that Yosef was a lad vis-a-vis the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. He understands it as a specific role, namely that Yosef was considered a young lad by his father, and therefore when he went out to shepherd the sheep, he was under the charge of Bnei Bilhah and Bnei Zilpah. He was under their responsibility. And what happened there? How did the relationship go wrong? They were supposed to watch him, and they were supposed to serve him. They were supposed to take very good care of their father's special child. So it's not surprising, says the Ramban, why even the Bnei HaShvachot, the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, came to ultimately hate Yosef. Again, the Ramban is trying to suggest how Yosef could be hated not only by the children of Leah, of whom he's bringing bad reports back to their father, but how even the children of Bilhah and Zilpah could come to hate Yosef. And what the Ramban suggests is that Yosef was in a role v'hu na'ar. He was considered a young boy under their responsibility. They were charged with taking care of their father's favorite son, and that led to their resentment for Yosef. Everybody there? Rosalind, Alan, everything okay? Jay, Ilana, everything okay? Everybody following? Great, thanks. Okay, so Pasuk Gimel, the next verse that we read, introduced the Yaakov favoritism of Yosef, which we could imagine only led to increased hatred by Yaakov, but by the sons for Yosef, by the other brothers and stepbrothers of Yosef. And it told us that Yisrael, Yaakov's other name, favored and loved Yosef more than all the other children, ki ben zekunim hulo, because he is the ben zekunim, and we translated that as the son of old age. But the Midrashim that I bring on Pasuk Gimel, source number one from Bereshit Rabbah, offer two other interpretations. The first one, it understands the words ben zekunim as what's called a notrikon. It understands it almost as a contracted word, that ben zekunim means ziv ikunin domelo, that their facial image was similar. And we saw that in one of the Midrashim about toldot. The toldot referred to Ela toldot Yaakov Yosef, that Yaakov's descendants are called, are referred to here only as Yosef and not the full list, because they had a facial image that was similar. So that Yaakov and Yosef resembled one another, and therefore he is the spit image of his father. And so when you wanted to say, hey, who's Yaakov's son? You just took one look at Yosef and you said, ah, obviously this one is Yaakov's son. So according to that direction of understanding the relationship, Yaakov favors Yosef, ki ben zekunim hulo, because they look alike. He favors Yosef because he is similar in facial image. Rabbi Nechemia suggests something different. Rabbi Nechemia suggests ben zekunim from the language of zaken, which is not always an old man, but in rabbinic understanding, zaken is ze shekana chokhma, one who acquires knowledge. So Yaakov loves Yosef because Yosef has acquired knowledge. And according to Rabbi Nechemia in the Midrash, Yaakov spent lots of time teaching Yosef all sorts of halachot, and he was a loyal student and passed them on. So that whatever Yaakov learned from his ancestors, he passed on his Torah knowledge directly to Yosef. He is his ben zekunim, his zaken, ze shekana chokhma. So two non-literal understandings of ben zekunim here in the Midrash. Not that Yosef is the son of old age of Yaakov and therefore is favored, but rather that Yosef looks like Yaakov and therefore he favors him, or that Yosef was his favorite child because he was his best student. Yaakov passed on his Torah learning to him, and he was the best and most receptive student. Now, what resistance could you think of in the Midrash to understanding the phrase ben zekunim literally, that he is a son of old age? Why does the Midrash go out of its way to suggest two alternatives to ben zekunim and not take the literal one, which is that Yaakov loves Yosef because he is the son born into old age for him? Any suggestions? Anybody want to suggest? Right. Jay says that there's a problem. There's Binyamin, right? That's the question that the Rashbam asks, that both Binyamin, who was born after Yosef, and Yosef are born into old age. Actually, the Ramban in Source number 3 goes even further, and he says, not only should Binyamin be called the Ben Zekunim and Yosef, but many of the other tribes. He says there's only a year or two difference between Yosef and other tribes, Yisachar and Zebulun. He says there's not a big age gap. So Yaakov has many B'nai Zekunim, has many sons of old age. Therefore, I think we could say that the Midrash goes out of its way to offer non-literal interpretations of the phrase. The Ben Zekunim must mean something else. So it gives us either the resemblance interpretation or that he's his prime student. The Ramban suggests something else, that Ben Zekunim is a job description. It's a role. Just like Zehuna'ar, according to the Ramban, was a role, the Ramban here suggests that ki ben zekunim hulo, Yaakov loved Yosef the most because Yosef was his ben zekunim. He served the old father, which is why Yosef didn't always go out with his brothers to pasture. Much of the time, Yosef was the homebody taking care of his father. So suggesting that ben zekunim is a job description, not a status about when he was born in his father's life relating to age. So we've seen here a few different interpretations of ben zekunim. and trying to account for the Ben Zikunim being the reason for Yaakov's favoring Yosef. And he makes for him a ktonet pasim. We will skip to for today the midrashim on other interpretations of pasim. I think you'd be surprised that they don't have anything to do with stripes, according to the midrash. Many of them have other non-literal interpretations of pasim. I just want to look at the final source, dealing with the fourth verse, the brothers' hatred. The brothers see now that their father loves Yosef more than all of them, that he makes him the special robe, and they hate him and they can't speak peacefully to him. Says the Midrash, Shahaya ba v'shoel bishlomam. Yosef, in contrast to the brothers who hated him and couldn't speak peacefully, Yosef came to seek out their welfare and their well-being, but they didn't answer him. V'lo ayu meshivim oto. And they wouldn't even answer him. And the Midrash concludes that usually a person who enters into positions of power, which Yosef is entering into, he's entering into the favored son status, usually such a person doesn't even bother paying attention and asking the well-being of everybody around him. But Yosef had the decency to do that. He was modest enough to come seek their welfare out, but they hated him so much and they couldn't even come to seek out his welfare. So trying to set up the contrast that Yosef, even though he is bringing back evil reports about his brothers to his father, even though he is the favorite son, even though he might have the special homebody role, says the Ramban of Ben Zikunim, of being his father's favorite servant or son servant at home, nevertheless, whenever he encountered the brothers, he always had a nice word and sought their welfare. But the brothers put the whole picture together and couldn't stand Yosef. So what we have here in our first four verses of our chapter is the background for what's going to unfold. We meet Yosef here emerging as both favorite son and hated brother. And we get clues about that early on in the chapter. Ela toldot Yaakov Yosef, somehow all 10 other brothers and Binyamin are missing from the list of Yaakov's descendants. So we saw non-literal understandings of toldot, either being facial resemblance or circumstances, life events that repeat themselves in the life of Yaakov and Yosef. And then we saw negative descriptions of Yosef. He's 17, but yet he does ma'aseh na'arut. And he brings back evil reports about his brothers, and we saw different interpretations of the evil reports that he brings, all setting the background for the brothers to hate Yosef. But if Yosef's behavior is not enough to get the brothers to hate him, and all of the brothers, not just the children of Leah, but also the children of the maidservants, Yisrael, Yaakov's treatment of Yosef in Pasuk Gimel only adds insult to injury for the brothers. He favors him. He loves him as the Ben Zikunim, either the one that to whom he's bestowed all his knowledge, or his son of old age who takes care of him, as the Ramban said, or the one whom there was such a facial resemblance that nobody could miss the connection between Yaakov and Yosef. He loves him. He makes him a favorite object, a special robe that symbolizes the favoritism. And the brothers can't stand Yosef. And even haughty Yosef, who comes to ask their well-being, in the brothers' eyes, doesn't even deserve an answer of shalom. V'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom. They can't even answer him peacefully. Next week, please God, we will explore the continuing verses of Yosef's dreams. Two dreams that only continue to add anger and fire into the brothers' hatred, but also trigger Yaakov to confront what it means to have favored Yosef up till now and what seeds he has sown in the family dynamics. And then we'll take all of that and move into the story of the selling of Yosef, understanding better the hatred that exists between the brothers and trying to explore who does what, which brother is involved or which group of brothers are involved in which aspect of the selling, how the story unfolds, and we'll explore some sort of creative and radical interpretations in the commentaries for who sold Yosef and what happened with the money there. And then the fourth week we'll trace the theme of the brothers and Yosef into their ultimate reconciliation as Sefer Bereishit concludes. So in the meantime, see you next week. Thank you.